Hello, Gallatin Valley and online listeners. You are listening to KGVM, Bozeman Community Radio, broadcasting at 95.9 FM and streaming at kgvm.org. I'm Roxana, and this is Desert Oracle Radio Replay. Well, maybe you can hear the water dripping behind me. We're doing that to keep the pipes from freezing. Here at the cabin, it's well below zero outside, and we are still sitting by the wood stove in recovery from Miss Rona's visit. She has just worn us out, so to spare you from listening to my yammering on about the details, we'll do a double feature. Today, our first episode of Desert Oracle Radio was produced by Ken Lane on January 5th, back in 2018. It's called Skinwalker Ranch, and if you like the mysterious, enjoy the next 28 minutes. Oh, it could be my Rona brain, but I agree with Ken about the definition of a good road. Do you?
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Well, night has fallen on the Mojave. The Eastern Front and the grueling war against the Los Angeles Basin spilling over the mountains and consuming the entirety of the American Southwest. Las Vegas on one side and the other side comprised of the Los Angeles, Riverside, San Bernardino, Victorville, Yucca Valley, Barstow, Orange County, Palm Springs, Indio, San Diego, Chula Vista to Santa Barbara metropolitan area. The most populous part of the most populous state in the alleged Union, and a couple hundred miles of mostly wild Mojave Desert in the middle. The tourists have mostly gone home for now. So our one road into the national park from Joshua Tree no longer looks so much like the 101 for now. We've got enough cars out here already, many of them helpfully broken down, half overgrown with ragweed, filled with sleeping centipedes and rodents, piled up on our desert acreage like so much unacknowledged outdoor sculpture. And our cars that can get on the road are generally piloted by people who probably shouldn't be on the road due to various conditions and medications and hallucinations. It's best to stay off the roads, especially at night. Stay off these roads or you'll find out why. Coming up from the canyon from an engagement down in Palm Springs not long ago, I found myself in the usual inexplicable nighttime traffic jam on the 62 in Yucca Valley, and by usual I mean the road was mostly empty, but for a couple of cars that had suddenly come to a halt in their respective lanes. And then I realized there were people wandering the highway, lurching and staggering through the darkness. Hobos or lunatics, perhaps, and I veered between a couple of these characters in that special kind of slow motion that occurs when you realize calamity is close at hand. Somehow, certainly not due to skill on the part of any of the participants, the cars all managed to be driven around the figures in the roadway, and on that night at least, there were no fatalities. A good road is a road with nobody else around, nobody else on it. I believe that's from the Book of Proverbs. Now, there's a ranch way out in northeastern Utah that has become a haunted location of our time, and because it is back in the news with regard to this Pentagon UFO story sort of unceremoniously dumped on us all during the last days of 2017, I figured I'd return to the odd little book published on the topic, a book called Hunt for the Skinwalker. Well, like a lot of books of this sort, it was better as a newspaper feature article years previous without all the filler to get it to book length. You know, there's nothing more miserable than trying to make the word count on a book when you have at best enough for a nice feature article. This I know from sad experience. That's why the Desert Oracle is exactly 44 pages per issue, including the cover. I don't want to torture myself, and I sure don't want to torture the person kind enough to spend a few dollars on a small book. And it is still always late. That's awful, I tell you. If any of these show business people hanging around Joshua Tree and offering their always vague offers these days, if any of that turns into a real check that the bank will cash, the first thing I will do is hire an editor to help get the damned Desert Oracle out on a more regular schedule. That's the second thing, actually. The first will be something enjoyable, like taking off to Bishop or Moab for a few nights. Maybe have a decent restaurant dinner and a cocktail. Doesn't that sound fancy? Skinwalker Ranch is a 480-acre property where a family had reportedly tried to raise Angus cattle in the 1990s before freaking out over the strange sights and lights that they witnessed. This place warranted a mention in the New York Times UFO Pentagon study story, and I thought I'd return to the book to see why the Pentagon and the DIA would send investigators to this place. This haunted land of supposed cattle mutilations and yellow-eyed werewolves. The suggestion in the Politico story on the same topic was that investigators were curious if Russian or Chinese technology was at work, perhaps some kind of psychological weaponry. And it's an interesting angle, but the stories around this remote and rural part of Utah, much of it a tribal reservation since Abraham Lincoln's time, predate pretty much anything you'd consider modern technology. Now, there's an odd part of the book where what is described as an RV, a motor coach, a recreational vehicle, is witnessed on the ranch property beyond a locked gate. The motorhome is brilliantly lit from within, and Mrs. Sherman witnesses an office of sorts within, including a human figure sitting at a desk and looking out at the ranch property from big windows. And then, of course, there's nothing there, no tire tracks, etc. Most of the rest of the encounters fit the folklore news reports from the 20th century Southwest. Triangular UFOs, vanishing monsters with eyes like burning coals, orbs of brilliant light zooming around the property and the ridge beyond, mutilated cattle with no signs of blood and all the bodily organs surgically removed. But the mystery office trailer is unique to Skinwalker Ranch, I think. And it was still on my mind 100 pages on when the scientist who co-wrote the book is on the property one night, long after the family has moved away, and after the Las Vegas billionaire Robert Bigelow has purchased the ranch from the Shermans, so that his new paranormal research organization, staffed with mysterious ex-Pentagon characters like Colonel John Alexander, can go out there and measure what's happening in some way. The scientist is at the mobile laboratory, a trailer equipped with an office. And of course, they're up all night watching for ghoulies. Did Mrs. Sherman perhaps see the future that night long before Bigelow's scientist installed their office trailer on the property? Did the mystery RV predict the location of the Bigelow trailer? You know, I've put these questions to our friend Jeremy Corbell, who's currently working on a new documentary about Skinwalker Ranch with the cooperation of the original crew. And as is my habit, I took photographs of the relevant pages. I texted those to Jeremy with the question, where was the NIDS trailer, the National Institute of Discovery Science trailer, in relation to the Sherman's RV sighting? Jeremy wrote back, very close. The NIDS trailer is still there, right next to the main homestead. I write back, was she seeing the future? I mean, it's a ridiculous thing to see. A phantom office trailer with a night researcher inside, and that particular thing later appears right there in the form of the NIDS trailer. Jeremy replies, and I will edit his foul language as always. It's all very crazy what happens in that area. Just bonkers. It is a strange thing to think about, the idea that certain places on the earth might be more likely to produce strange visions, strange encounters. Because even while I wonder if the Phantom RV with the office inside and the nighttime monitoring staff predicted the real trailer with an office inside and a nighttime monitoring staff, I also wonder about this portal stuff. The idea that this place has a dimensional doorway of some kind, occasionally open. A place where, as the ancient Celtic people used to say about Halloween time, the veil between worlds is very thin. Does this perhaps mean that they are studying us from the other side, or one of the other sides, one of many other sides? That they have a research trailer set up on the ranch, too? Wouldn't that be something else? They've got some weirdo scientists out there. Maybe they're not quite human, but they're pretty close. Imagine what they think of us. And they keep seeing flying triangles and werewolves coming out of a door in the sky. And, well, they're not so different than us, after all. They put a research station and a trailer on site. Maybe their boss built extended stay motels in their reality, too. Maybe they have a jabbering old baboon in a bathrobe as president, too. Who knows? It's kind of a creative dead end when you can't imagine anything in alternate dimensions beyond a variation of our own dull setup. Is it our perception that lacks creativity, or does our perception simply require a few parameters to fill in the blanks? A frame, a lattice, a copy editing error created the shape and style of UFO known as the flying saucer. A copy editing error. Kenneth Arnold's original quote was about a fleet of silver, boomerang-shaped craft zooming across vast distances like, quote, saucers skipping on the water. That was turned into the accidental perfect phrase, flying saucer, the creation of which was immediately followed by great waves of eyewitness reports of dish-shaped UFOs, flying saucers. Well, I sure don't know what's on the other side of the portal at Skinwalker Ranch, but I'd like to send in a team of dignitaries to check it out. Make a diplomatic effort, a governmental effort. I wonder what it would be like if all these Washington characters were plunged into a terrible netherworld where 10-foot-tall bull demons tore into their flesh with monstrous poison-tipped horns, and then the victims are dragged across the salt flats to the 100-story hospital where everybody always survives. And then they dump you right back onto the plain of despair, the place of long weeping. And just when you thought maybe this time the monsters weren't coming back, the bull demons with the poisonous horns, and it's not like you can see anything but the terrible sulfurous fog, well, then you hear the terrible groans and you see the burning coals of the red-yellow eyes just before the horns strike again. According to the travel industry, those who still have the means for personal enjoyment are said to especially enjoy the purchase of experiences over consumer goods in our time. The consumer goods, the iPhones and the flip-flops and the heart valves, you know, they're all produced at about the same 1,000 work camps in China. So any consumer good is of no particular rarity, because anybody with the money or the credit can buy 100 of the same thing off the internet at 2:45 in the morning if they so desire. And is why people from the city come to the desert so desperate for some open space and clear, dry air that they'll be happy with just about anything, even a dusty parking lot on the busy highway with the convoys of Marine Corps machinery and Walmart trucks rumbling by. What if our visitors at Skinwalker Ranch and other such desert locations are tourists looking to purchase an experience? You know, if I had done everything else that could be done and I had the money to make up something else to do, and the technology existed, well, maybe I'd take a spaceship or a time travel flight to some strange place and watch some hillbillies in the Southwest somewhere, baffled by the lights in the sky and the disappearing dogs and what have you. Maybe that would be fun. Well, it sure is good to get back to the office after the holidays, after all the tourists have gone home and have all the desert newspapers waiting in the P.O. box. You know, a lot of desert towns still have a local newspaper, and whether it comes out daily or twice weekly or every Thursday or once a month or whenever the publisher can get the money together to pay the printer, we do try to get them all delivered here to the Desert Oracle, because how else can you keep up with all the interesting stories coming out of our various sun-blasted human settlements across the Southwest? I used to take a look at Facebook to see what people were talking about in the 8,000-person unincorporated Mad Max location where this broadcast originates. And pretty soon I figured out that the people were mostly talking about their opinions about things happening thousands of miles away, which is all fine, but not exactly why you'd go to the trouble of moving out to Apache Mojave Desert at the end of the road. So bless these local newspapers, the few of them still out there. So let's see what's happening around and across these desert lands. We've got the Moab Sun News here. Let's see, there's something about the ambulance service. The snowfall won't fix the drought. That's a perennial story. Here's something. Dead horse comes to life. Let's see here. All right, well, that's not what I was hoping for at all. Winter activities planned for Dead Horse Point State Park. Nice place, but it's not a horse coming back to life. Alright, everything in here has already happened. That's sort of the downside of reading the paper from 2 weeks ago. Anyway, they had the annual bird count, apparently. Let's see what it says here. During past year's bird counts, participants have spotted pinion jays, woodhouses scrub jays, common ravens, juniper titmouse, rock wrens, and dark-eyed juncos. I like the cactus wren. Much easier to say than rock wren. Plus, it lives in the cactus. A common Mojave Cholla cactus can take 30 years to grow high enough for cactus wrens to build their fine nest between the spiny branches. The cactus wren is a bird with a big personality. They'll hang around on the screen window, pulling bugs from the space around the frame, cackling and complaining the whole time. They're just very enjoyable birds. You know, every desert bird is a quality bird, but the cactus wren has earned its place in the holy trinity of endearingly comical desert birds, along with the common raven and the roadrunner. Yes, they are little dinosaurs, but they are our little dinosaurs. All right, I've got another one here. The Elko Daily Free Press up there in northern Nevada. I was up there not too long ago for the cowboy poetry thing. I'm glad I went. I'm glad I don't have to go again. Here's some news. Elko to get faster internet. Turns out the ranchers and truckers and regular people like anywhere all want to watch TV across the internet. The Reno-based internet provider that serves Elko will be installing some of this and some of that. Before you know it, you can watch Netflix on your laptop or however you like. New pricing starts at $149.49 a month for the internet. Netflix subscription not included. Now here's kind of a nice story. Prisoners grow thousands of sagebrush plants for endangered sage grouse. I mean, there's nothing nice about being locked up in federal prison, and there's nothing particularly cheerful about the sage grouse nearing extinction because the sagebrush habitat is shrinking from development and invasive species. But these prisoners have been growing sagebrush outside in the prison gardens, which they enjoy. And the Bureau of Land Management out west is always happy to get these little sagebrush plugs at low cost, which means more sage grouse habitat can be restored and etc. And this is in the newspaper because momentary Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke cut the funding. $250,000. What's that about? Four helicopter rides for that guy? Without stated reason, of course, the program's managers say they will run bake sales in attempts to keep it funded. Try to find a few interesting local news articles, and boy, you just can't really avoid news about the gangsters. Well, you know what that Princess Leah did once the chains got too tight out there in the desert? Well, she strangled that grotesque mobster worm, if I remember correctly. That happened in the Imperial Sand Dunes, north of Yuma, on the California side. For years now, people have been finding bits of the old Jabba the Hutt sand barge in the dunes out there. It has become a true ghost ship in the desert. I've gone out there looking for it myself. And from Page, Arizona, a murder-suicide on the shore of Lake Powell, which is kind of a murder-suicide of its own when you think about it. Let's see here, 37-year-old man, 25-year-old woman, he shot her dead, then shot himself. He shot her in the car. Then he took a nice walk on the reservoir shore and did what he should have done first. Well, I'm having a hard time finding the kind of news story I was looking for tonight. I apologize. You know, the meanest cactus wren has never committed the kind of atrocious behavior common to even the kindest human being. All right, I have the Victorville paper here, the Daily Press. Very funny newspaper, especially the opinion pages. You know, they used to put some happier stuff in the paper, at least in the year-end features. This is actually the headline for the year-end feature in the Victorville Daily Press. A year of trouble. From murder and mayhem to a bribery arrest, crime was High Desert's 2017 watchword. That's quite a headline. All the way from murder and mayhem to bribery. I don't know what 2017 watchword is supposed to mean here, really, but at least 2017 is over. And it seems that while violent crime is in long-term decline in the big cities where all the money lives, on the Victorville side of the Mojave High Desert, crime is up 20% in 1 year. They call it Victimville for a reason, friends. This is from the article in question by my staff report, apparently. Staff report. You know, when rinky-dink content management systems collide with small-town tightwad newspaper management, it's really a match made in hell, the hell that is late capitalism. Speaking of, Victorville will soon have California's one and only Cracker Barrel chain restaurant. Now there's a distinction. Anyway, here's one of the notable murders of the year from over there. Quote, one of the highest profile murder cases in recent memory came to an end when a Bakersfield jury convicted former Hellendale resident Sabrina Limon of murder in the death of her husband at a railroad facility in Tehachapi. Limon plotted the murder with her former lover, I guess they'd broken up, Hesperia resident Jonathan Hearn, in exchange for testifying against Sabrina Limon. Robert Hearn got a 25-year prison sentence for killing Robert Limon. Lots more going on in Hellendale than you would think. We have two more campfire stories at the Ace Hotel in Palm Springs. I don't like to do the same thing too often, so this is it for now. Thursday, February 1, Thursday, March 1, both dates being the first Thursday of the month, 7 p.m. around a campfire. Camp bar right there. Bring your ID and a couple of dollars. From Amboy to Zyzix and all across the great Mojave Wilderness, this has been Desert Oracle Radio, broadcasting from KCDZ 107.7 FM in downtown Joshua Tree, home of the three-season traffic jam. Sometimes it's hard to tell, but we are sponsored by Desert Oracle, the pocket field guide to the mysterious American desert. It is on sale across the Southwest. You can find it at the Little Alien in Rachel, Nevada, right there at Area 51. You can find it at Sedona Outdoors in downtown Sedona, in Joshua Tree, in Yucca Valley. It's all around. If you're up in Ridgecrest, go to Red Rock Books, say hi to Anne. Go to DesertOracle.com if you would like to subscribe. We've also got all kinds of information about the show, including the sounds that you hear. We had a couple of new ones tonight from Red, Blue, Black, Silver. We'll see you out on the highway. Good night from the Voice of the Desert.
We are at the bottom of the hour, and you are listening to Desert Oracle Radio Replay on KGVM 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio. We are in a warming trend right now, and our high today might get to 7 below. Our show continues with a Desert Oracle Radio episode produced by Ken on January 12th, 2018. He calls it What is the Mojave? And the business developer, Brendan Mays, is up to his profit schemes again. It reminds me of some of our Bozeman housing issues. See what you think.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the Mojave, oh, the beloved Mojave, land of mystery and wonder. And what is the Mojave that we are always going on about? It is the driest of American deserts, and the hottest temperature ever recorded was in the Mojave at the northern end up in Death Valley, 134.1 degrees Fahrenheit. But after many decades of believing that story to be true, I have recently looked it up on the internet to make sure the temperature I recalled was correct. And now it seems the Furnace Creek reading of July 10, 1913 is considered a measurement error, at least by some of the experts at the Weather Underground. Well, thanks a lot. Next, they're going to tell us the world's largest thermometer outside the old Bun Boy and Baker is not considered an accurate scientific instrument. It was apparently not a measurement error when, just two summers back, Kuwait claimed the 134-degree title and is officially the hottest place for the moment. They can have it. There are many classifications regarding the American desert, many competing classification systems for the American and North American deserts. Unsatisfied by the usual four or five American deserts that are sort of halfway known amongst certain people, at best, some biologists go so far as to propose more than a dozen named deserts, including the Thompson-Okanagan Plateau, an arid region in Canada's British Columbia. I've been thinking about that desert in Western Canada for a while now. Might need to head up there and check it out. There's only so much you can learn about a place from the rural property listings on the internet. The Mojave Desert is mostly in southeastern California, but it stretches over southern Nevada, including Las Vegas, and southwestern Utah, around St. George, and over a lot of northeastern Arizona, a place with so many Joshua trees of such unusual size that it can be downright overwhelming, especially if you're more familiar with the smaller, scrawnier Joshua trees common to the national park of the same name. There is such a noticeable difference between the Joshua trees of Joshua Tree and the Joshua trees of the eastern Mojave that the eastern variety was finally acknowledged as a subspecies or maybe even a separate species, and that eastern version is named for the pioneering desert biologist Dr. Edmund Yeager. Now, it's dry in the Mojave because of the mountains, the transverse ranges of South Central and Southern California, the San Bernardino Mountains, the Tehachapis, the bottom half of the Sierra Nevada Range. Now, these mountains were pushed up from beneath the earth as the great plates of the planet crashed against each other, where the Pacific Ocean meets North America. And these mountain ranges block out what little rain might otherwise come across, and that makes the deserts very thirsty, along with a lack of vegetation, a lack of much in the way of tree canopy and moist ground cover. Well, that makes for a dry place, dry as a dried up bone out in the dried up old desert. The indicator species of the Mojave Desert is the Joshua tree, but it only appears in the higher elevations, especially around 4,000, 5,000 feet up, the perfect altitude for that perfect landscape of a Joshua tree woodland, with junipers and the green stick leaves of Mormon tea. The Joshua tree needs that little bit more rain or snow up in the hills. So when you see a Joshua tree, you know you're in the Mojave. There are bigger deserts in America. There's the Sonoran, covering plenty of Arizona and the Mexican state of Sonora. And there's the Chihuahuan Desert, covering most of Mexico's northern interior, all of West Texas, the bottom half of New Mexico, the southeastern corner of Arizona. And then there is the Great Basin, the dream landscape of the American West. Great walls of north-south mountain ranges capped with snow for half the year or more. Great sloping plains of sagebrush, sage-grouse, and pronghorn, wolf packs, and immense herds of mule deer. Bighorn sheep dancing on the rocks a mile above you. Cold, cold nights. Dry, clear days. Punctuated by the winter storms, thousand-mile-long blue-gray airships of polar air and Pacific waters. The Great Basin takes up most of Nevada, everything north of Las Vegas, and Area 51, in fact. It's the Salt Lake side of Utah, too, and a bit of eastern Oregon, the southeastern corner of Idaho, and that most perfect place on Earth, the Eastern Sierra. That sparsely populated sliver of California above Death Valley. The wonderful landscape accidentally preserved in perpetuity by the Los Angeles Department of Water and Power, which bought up the water rights ranch to ranch, creating a Sierra snowpack water supply for Los Angeles. Beginning in 1907 and lasting through the Mono Lake extension in the 1940s, LADWP bought up more than 300,000 acres of the Eastern Sierra. As a result, the Eastern Sierra never developed in the usual 20th century way. The things we've come to expect is the usual ugliness of the settled areas of the American Southwest, the 20-lane traffic-clogged interstates, the endless, awful repetition of Walmarts and Costcos and strip malls and fast-food franchises, fitness centers and plastic surgery medical centers, the relentless world of the 21st century existence we must suffer. None of that can be easily found in the Eastern Sierra. The towns are all hemmed in by their charming and civilized boundaries of 70 years ago, surrounded by sagebrush expanses, peaceful alfalfa pastures with a few handsome cattle here and there, clear cold creeks lined with aspen and cottonwood winding through old neighborhoods and city parks, forest and high desert. Oh, it's a place too good for us, and every time I go up there, I can't come up with a single good reason not to stay there. The best place is the place where you'd be happiest to die. And the best way to not die in a Walmart parking lot or at work inside an open plan office or sitting in traffic is to not be in those places when you die. There are a couple of very good books about ravens by the naturalist Bernd Heinrich. The Mind of a Raven is one I've enjoyed, and Heinrich is always turning up in interesting nature films about mystery woodpeckers and the life cycles of trees and all that. Well, I came across an article about Bernd Heinrich in Outside Magazine about his busy working life, mostly spent on 640 acres of Maine woods, and this part kind of jumped out at me. I realized that here was a rare man, a throwback. We live in an age that affords little time and space for communing with nature. We are busy, our days are fragmented, but Bernd has dug in his heels against this collective drift. He has recognized where he wants to be in old age and settled in with purpose. That was written by Bill Donahue from Outside Magazine, November 2017. Settle in. settle in with purpose. Bernheinrich doesn't even have running water at his main cabin. He runs his laptop off a solar panel when he's writing. He runs something called ultra marathons, and he's 77 years old, which will mean different things to you based on your current age and level of contentment. You know, instead of contentment, instead of a peaceful and satisfying end of life, more and more elderly Americans are working long hours for low pay because they cannot afford to retire. We've got Brendan Mays on the line. Brendan, you are currently managing such a workforce, and I want to talk to you about some of the complaints we have heard. Good to have you on the program, Brendan. Tell me about this warehouse and why the county is taking action.
The county is taking action against Mojave Mirage Industries due to what they claim to be are labor violations. We, of course, don't think there are any violations or anything, citation worthy or infraction worthy to even speak about, but they've taken a slightly different tack and are looking at pulling our permit for operations, for business operations.
In this county, it is very difficult to get shut down for anything. What on earth is going on in this warehouse?
Well, we do fulfillment and distribution for a lot of large online retail. We have a lot of workers that we classify as independent contractors. And it seems that the county, along with the state, tend to want to classify our workers as actual employees, which we completely disagree with. These are independent contractors. They sign a memo of understanding with us that says that they will be working as independent contractors. They are not employees. They claim that we are treating our we're treating our independent contractors to unsafe or unhealthy working conditions and living conditions, since we do provide a certain amount of living assistance to these independent contractors, most of them who are the elderly vagabond type or traveling around the country in RVs looking for work. And we've set up a beautiful parking lot, you know, outside of the warehouse, where they can pull up their RVs and get power. We have free Wi-Fi. We have it's like an upscale parking lot, basically. We've got an area where they can purge their sewage tanks. We've got everything set up for them for comfortable living, kind of like one of those Walmart parking lot situations, but with all the amenities that you could want if you're traveling around in an RV. They're saying that we've got a certain level of concentration that's too high in this parking lot, of too many people. One of the county supervisors said it looked like a refugee camp. Well, I'm sorry. I've seen the refugee camps, you know, of the Syrian displaced people on TV, and this is nothing like that. This is much nicer. Nobody's living in tents. We don't have kids running around, you know, looking for handouts. None of that kind of stuff. These are self-motivated, working, elderly adults who we provide jobs for and other services for them. And they all seem to be very happy with the situation. Now, they said that there's a too high of concentration of people, too many people per acre is what they were claiming. In order to meet their initial request to lower the density of the people, since they are in campers, we've moved them out on the BLM land and into the areas of the park that are not as popular with tourists and kind of out of the way and tucked around the back of the rocks and down in the gullies where people can't see them and they're not going to cause any problems. We thought it was a great solution. It turns out that the National Park System doesn't see it as positively as we see it.
Brendan, the charge is that you've moved more than 200 ramshackle motorhomes and their full-time residents to protected wilderness areas within the national park.
We give all of our independent contractors in their startup package, which of course includes, you know, how to apply for certain government programs, how to get assistance. And in this packet, also it contains areas, maps. These are grown adults. These are independent people. They can read signs. They know where they should be going and where they can't be going. So So if they're occupying areas that are environmentally sensitive or some sort of woodchuck, or well, I guess you wouldn't have a woodchuck out there, you'd have a desert chuck. If there's any of those kind of animals or protected wetland area or whatever, and people are moving into them, we have no control over that. We distinctly say, fly under the radar. Stick your head in the sand, so to speak. Don't kick up a bunch of dust. We've, again, tried to stress to them that there's areas of land that are National Park Service, and we know how, well, I don't want to call them uptight control freaks, or I don't want to say that they're abusing their authority or anything. They're trying to protect their park, and that's a wonderful thing, and they should be thanked for that. They're doing a hell of a job. That's fantastic. We've tried to move the people more onto the BLM land, because, you know, the BLM's a lot more open to the use by, you know, Westerners, for Westerners. They're really into the ranchers. They give good rates for mining. We find a lot less trouble working with the BLM, so we try to direct the workers. We try to direct the independent contractors onto the BLM land, because there seems to be a lot less trouble when they set up camp there. These people move all around the country looking for work at various times. They go to various places. A lot of them have now left to do preparations in the Imperial Valley, for example, for the salad crops being planted out there right now, berry season. They're doing planting right now. November, a lot of them were working the turkey slaughterhouse circuit down in Texas and up over in Tennessee. We had them doing shipping and packaging fulfillment for a number of large online retailers. We were doing package fulfillment and shipping and processing. And now that the holiday season is over, a lot of those jobs, well, they're seasonal. So they go away, and these people need to work, because they gotta pay off their debts to society, their debts to their home lenders, and debts to their family, I'm sure. They've probably borrowed a lot of money from people all over the place. And got
Brendan, these are people who are supposed to be in their retirement years.
Well, we would all be retired by the age of 55 with that fat city pension at $100,000 a year in our houseboat, trawling along Lake Tahoe. But that's not the United States in the year 2018. That's just not the way we're headed. If anything, people are working later and later and later. Congress talks all the time about moving the mandatory retirement age from, 63 and a half, and it was 65. Now they're talking to pushing all the way to 67 or even 70. So it's a nationwide trend that we don't have the ability to fight, but we do have the ability to take advantage of it. These people need to work. We're going to find them jobs. We're very seriously looking over these allegations by Kalosha about these unsafe working conditions, as they claim. We don't think that they're unsafe at all, and they say that there is a certain threshold or number of injuries. I forget exactly what it is. There's an accident rate per worker per day, which is, you know, some government pointy head guy figures it out. It's supposed to be around 0.07 to 0.08. I don't know exactly how that works. What's 0.08 injuries, you know, per worker per day? It's all a bunch of numbers being shoved around in a spreadsheet, but they said that our rate is a little bit too high. They said it was high by a factor of 5, whatever that means. They said our floor is too uneven, which was causing a lot of tripping hazards and people falling, you know. There were a few bad falls. One lady broke her hip, but she's an older lady, and that happens. Feel very bad about it, and we found a lot of workers enjoy the uneven floor. I mean, if you ever go to a bank or you go to the grocery store and you look down on the floor, they got these weird spongy mats that are kind of uneven, and it's actually good for your circulation. It's good for balance to be walking over an uneven surfaces. It is a combination of organic materials that we have brought in to try to level out the floor, which underneath is a solid concrete floor. There's concrete under there. It was a little broken up because of the previous use of the building was a heavy machinery and ironwork, and they managed to crack up the floor pretty good. So we managed to do some repairs with materials we found on site, locally sourced. It's all organic material. It's dirt from the outside, and we're here to comply. We've managed to bring in healthcare workers from around the world to help us with our, well, admittedly elderly, older population. They got a lot of health problems, and and they're fully qualified to practice medicine, you know, not in the United States necessarily, but, you know, all throughout Asia they can practice medicine. And the best part is we're getting them for a third of the rate that you'd have to pay doctors or nurses, and they provide the same level of health care.
The document, which was reproduced in the newspaper and which has your signature on the bottom, says that the intent is to, quote, patch these people up and get them back on the floor.
Yes, that sounds like the kind of business positive can-do attitude that I like to show and that my workers like to show. Patch them up and get them back in. You know, these people, they got these funny names for themselves, these independent contractors. They got a great sense of humor. They call themselves the Arthritic Army. Other ones call themselves Geriatric GIs, the veterans that we have working there that we receive benefits for employing. Other ones call themselves the Vagabond Vanguard. I mean, these are people who are living life. They've got a zest and a spirit. And we're there to, when they get hurt, when they fall down on the field of battle, we patch them up and send them right back up to the front, and they do a tremendous job for us. You ever see that movie Patton? I like to think of myself as in some form or some sort of weak imitation of General George Patton. You know, I'm there for my troops. I'm there to support them. I might slap them around a little bit, you know, to get them their spirits back up, but they're in there to fight and win and make some money. We packaged and shipped 2 million individual orders, Ken, in the space of 2 months. We try to be agnostic in terms of what we're packaging, and we're not selling this stuff, Ken. We're just doing order fulfillment. So if one of our clients happens to be a bookstore, well, we package up books and ship them. Another one, maybe pet products. Oh, another company over here, you know, sells sex toys or whatever. It's all the same to us. It goes in the box, a label stuck on it, and it goes out the door in a truck. Whatever it is, that's what we ship. We're not there, you know, to judge. We're not there to bring some sort of value judgment to the marketplace. We're there just to fulfill orders. We noticed that these RVs all contain, they're all self-contained power units. They've got little generators in them, and some of them generators are actually quite powerful, you know, 5,000 watt, 10,000, and we thought that it would be a good idea to take advantage of this surplus power that they're generating by plugging their RVs into the building, powering the building off of their generators, which would just otherwise be sitting there useless while they're working during the day. We thought, we got all this excess power generation, all this extra capacity. Why not tap into it? We had to heat the building some way. We didn't need a big long-term fix for the heating system. We just needed to get it up and running. So what we had to do was rely on the heating systems in the RVs to help heat inside the factory. Now, this factory is well ventilated. We got those little spinning air extractors on the top. You know, we cracked the doors in the back to let fresh air in. But what we did was we got a couple of the larger RVs inside the warehouse, and we fired them up. We put little tubes on the exhaust to run the exhaust outside so no one got too sick. And we just opened the doors on the RVs and cranked those heaters to 10. You know, we cranked those heaters to 11. You know what I mean? You know, there's only so many layers you can wear before your arms stop working. You know, you can't even grab the packages. So there's only so many layers you can wear. But we managed to get the temperature in the mornings up to just above freezing, so at least could be a little bit more comfortable and get more work done. Because that's what we're about, Ken. We're about getting work done. Part of this is our program trying to fly a little bit under the radar, so to speak. We like to rotate our workers, you know, around the valley, around the high desert. Get them moving. You know, it's harder to track a moving object than one just sitting out in the open.
This is KCDZ-FM, Informational Radio for Visitors. Welcome to Desert Oracle Reserve Monument. The following campgrounds are closed due to tourist season: Creosote Flat, Jug Canyon, Fitzgerald Wash, Paiute Creek, Centipede Springs, Trial and Error Canyon, and the Mona Lisa Loop. Due to a recent outbreak, you may experience delays at Pinyon Hole, Devil's Teapot, Mesquite Harbor, and Tarantula Garden. Goblin Holler has been closed since the accident and is not scheduled to reopen before 2027. Welcome to Desert Oracle Preserve. Regardless of the weather, it is advised that you carry 20 gallons of water at all times in your vehicle and 10 gallons per person on the trail. Please do not bring your pet dogs on the trails in the wilderness, and don't leave them in your cars to die in the parking lot at the trailhead. Please just don't. We already have a native canine here in the preserve called the coyote. Please don't make our dogs eat your dogs. Winter temperatures range from below freezing in the higher elevations to afternoon temperatures in the high 70s in the lower elevations. Prepare to be too hot in the day and too cold in the night. That's just how it is. You will encounter several sections of open cattle range within the preserve. These historic ranches are known for their charming period architecture, particularly the board and batten bunkhouse style of minimalist 20th century leisure equestrian residences. Also known for well-documented anomalous phenomena, including red-eyed humanoid entities and seemingly intelligently controlled orbs of swirling light, which have been known to chase people down the trail from Shoshone Point and Angry Jackass Mesa after hours trespassers are subject to arrest. Visitors are advised to register at the ranger station before embarking upon backcountry trails. Visitors should provide telephone and online contact information for at least 3 relatives. Blood test may be required for all hiking campers at Dead Lake and Desert Willow Falls. There is no cell phone service in or around Shovel Valley, Lost Horse Ledge, Pearson's Hole, Lost Hope Canyon, and Quartz Wash. The fringe-toed lizard is an interesting desert friend you may encounter on the dune trails on sunny afternoons. What a handsome lizard. Do not harass the fringe-toed lizard. Welcome to Desert Oracle Preserve. For your safety and for the good of us all, please come prepared when you come to the Mojave Desert. Do not wander the restricted sections at night. Do not leave children in tents by themselves, as tents are not buildings. Please enjoy the fresh air and peace and quiet, and try to maybe help it stay peaceful and quiet. The chances of seeing anything exciting, a family of coyotes and owls swooping low over the creosote branches, an inexplicable shape hovering over the lonesome highway, are much improved by conditions of peace and quiet. Please refrain from throwing your fast food wrappers out the window, and please try to not start a wildfire, and please remember to take your children or spouse or roommates or elderly relatives back to wherever you came from when you go home. From Amboy to Zizek's and across the Great Mojave Wilderness, this is Desert Oracle Radio, broadcasting from KCDZ 107.7 FM in downtown Joshua Tree. Friday nights at 10 p.m., listen live on your kitchen radio or listen to the podcast on your favorite digital device. Thanks for listening, and good night from the Voice of the Desert.
My thanks to Ken Lane for his work on Desert Oracle Radio. Thank you, Gallatin Valley, and everyone else for listening. Remember to call and leave a message or text about anything on your mind. The number is 1-406-404-6246. Please spread the word that you can hear this program on the air at 95.9 FM Bozeman Community Radio, or you can stream it online at kgbm.org at 7 p.m. Sundays and 9 a.m. Mondays. Our past Desert Oracle Radio replay episodes are also available on demand on the kgbm.org website.
Here, you're all businessmen here. Don't it make them better citizens? Doesn't it make them better customers? You said that what'd you say just a minute ago? They had to wait and save their money before they even thought of a decent home? Wait for what? until their children grow up and leave them, until they're so old and broken down that do you know how long it takes a working man to save $5,000? Just remember this, Mr. Potter, that this rabble you're talking about, they do most of the working and paying and living and dying in this community. Well, is it too much to have them work and pay and live and die in a couple of decent rooms and a bath? Anyway, my father didn't think so. People were human beings to him, but to you, a warped, frustrated old man, they're cattle.
I couldn't have said it better myself, George. Our music today is Telescope from Sync.exe and Jonathan Baroa, and my thanks go out to them too. I'll do my best to be here with you next week. In the meantime, be well and stay safe. Sweet dreams, listeners.